The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with Kia.
Okay, time now for what to watch on the big screen and small screen. We're joined in the studio by Chris Wasser, arts journalist and Sunday Independent film critic and podcaster and entertainment journalist Dee Reddy. Chris, let's go to your first choice. What have you got for us?
Toy Story 5. Well. You might have heard of it before. So 31 years after the first Toy Story film arrived in cinemas, we are still finding, or at least the guys at Disney Pixar are still finding ways to give, you know, the Buzz Lightyear and the rest of his plastic pals an awful case of the jitters. Like every time they think they're comfortable, that they found the kid that they'll stay with forever, a new toy comes along or a new bully comes along. This time it's tech. It's a piece of tech that is threatening them.
And I think that's such a new concept, isn't it? Tech replacing traditional toys.
I was throwing shade at Toy Story.
I mean, for the last one, they were up against Forky, you know, the plastic food utensil, a spork. This time, with the whole tech thing, even when this film was announced, I thought, you're a bit late here. This is, like, this story, the toys versus technology, probably would have been good 15 years ago, at least.
I saw a review saying there are people now who are married who would have been playing with
devices instead of toys.
Exactly. Yeah.
So they can't really get around that. And the other thing they can't really get around is the whole kind of, advocating for playtime over screen time. It's made by Disney.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a bit hypocritical. But we basically have Bonnie, the kid, playing with toys, realizes that all the other kids in her neighborhood don't play with toys anymore. They have handheld devices. So reluctantly, her parents get her own handheld device. It's called Lilypad, or Lily, voiced by Greta Lee. And she is evil. She wants rid of the rest of the toys. She's like, this, I'm the way forward for Bonnie. That won't do. So the rest of the toys have to gather their old friend Woody, who disappeared into the wilderness to help abandon toys in the last film, to come back and save them. He actually comes back with a belly and a bald spot, which I think I'm starting to pick these things apart. You know something's wrong when you're starting to pick things apart in a Toy Story film like this. But I was like, okay, look, we've established some sort of internal logic over the last 31 years that the toys are all know that they're toys and that they have to collapse when someone comes into a room. But the fact that they're now aging, that's bothering me. Okay, so that must tell you something about the quality of the film, if things like that are beginning to bother me.
Does it work? Because I will admit, I loved Toy Story 1.
Love it.
Loved it. Loved 2.
Perfect.
Even loved 3. Cried at 3,
oh,
in fact.
Everyone cried at 3.
You know, so all of that. And I have, like, they're older than my kids, so I went with them pre-kids, but then watch them all with the kids. So I have a real affection for this. So I'm kind of vaguely excited about this. Am I wasting my time?
I mean, the interesting thing about Toy Story 2 was that it was originally supposed to be direct-to-video. And when a test screening was done and when footage was shown to the guys at Disney, they said, this thing is brilliant. This thing could potentially be bigger and better than the first. And I think they were right. It was. Yeah. You have a perfect trilogy there. One of the best in cinema history, I think. Everything else after that, 4 and 5, they just feel like afterthoughts. And
it's
they kind
like
of feel
the first
like.
First 3 Star Wars, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
But and isn't it feels that the way as the cinema world becomes more and more obsessed with IP, they just can't let something drop.
No.
And if there's merch to be sold and blah, blah, blah.
I think the animation, they're now doing, Disney Pixar is now doing the kinds of things that seemed impossible when the first Toy Story film was made. So the animation is superb. The voice acting here is brilliant. You've got Tim Allen, you've got John Cusack and Tom Hanks all in the room together, which actually helps. You know, they're not recording their parts separately. I just think the story, there's about 5 or 6 ideas in here for good little Toy Story short films, but not for an entire.
You know, the way we would all agree that Toy Story worked for kids and for adults.
Yeah.
That was kind of one of its selling points, really. The fact that Woody has aged and has a bit of a paunch and a bit of a bull, is that for the adults? Is that they're trying to keep the adults
and the
who've
adults
been sticking around for 31 years now?
Probably watched it as kids who now have a belly and a paunch.
Yeah, who now get to kind of like share it with their kids. I will say the humor in this thing works. The jokes.
I was younger than some of my kids are now when they came out. Do you know what I mean?
I was 7
not
when
by much
curious.
Would you always in there? Oh, you. Younger than you still, though. And always.
I think this thing will definitely make you laugh. But the one thing that it's missing that you usually have with a Toy Story film is that big emotional payoff.
Yeah.
You know, this film that will, you know, that like the first 3 films did make, you know, audiences big and small cry. This one doesn't, because I think at this point there's only so many times you can say goodbye to these characters.
Dee, what's your choice?
My first one is The Burras, which is the new TV series, the Netflix TV series, 8 episodes from the Duffer Brothers team. So they're the team behind the Stranger Things, rather. This goes where they struggled, I suppose, with actors, child actors that were aging out of the characters in Stranger Things, they've perhaps overcorrected to some people's mind in this. So this goes the other direction completely, and it's set in a retirement village. So the premise of it is, in a seemingly perfect retirement community, a crew of unlikely heroes must stop an otherworldly threat from stealing the one thing they don't have, time. So I've actually been calling this at home Alien versus Pensioners. But I have to say, I have really, really enjoyed it. And I was quite saddened to learn yesterday, despite having said, like in my notes, I was like, oh, I really hope now they know to wrap this up rather than try and kind of flog the dead horse like we've been talking about
in
there.
In case the horses actually do die. Well, is that what
we're
saying?
Well, not so much that, but actually it's not been renewed for a second series. I just learned last night. But the good thing is, people can watch this as a contained limited series and it doesn't end on a cliffhanger. And I just think there needs to be more of that these days, you know?
Yeah, they always nearly end them on a cliffhanger,
and
don't they?
The cast in this is fabulous. Like, the lead is Alfred Molina, but you've also got Gina Davis, Bill Pullman, Carlos Miranda, Jenna Malone. And it's just a who's who of fantastic actors. And it's a great story. It's really fun. I kind of get the sense that they possibly watched VHS copies of Cocoon and Batteries Not Included as many times as I did as child.
Yeah.
As well as the Spielberg that they were mainlining as well.
Like the Thursday Murder Club, set in a retirement village, super sleuths, geriatric super sleuths, stellar cast, and I actually don't know how well the film did, even though I've seen it, but the books have sold millions. Mm. They're incredibly popular. So I wonder, are they also tapping into that
zeitgeisty? One of the reviews, it was either The Guardian or Variety, but they basically said, when I grow up, I want to be a boomer retiree, because what I'm seeing from all these TV shows and movies and blah, 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 is that they're having a great old time.
Yeah, maybe so. And what have you got for us else, Chris?
A film called Nino, very different to Toy Story, a French film from a filmmaker named Pauline Locou. It is about this young man named Nino Clavel, played by Theodore Pellerin. He is just going about his life leading up to his 29th birthday, hasn't really got that much to worry about. And then a doctor tells him after he has a pain in his throat that he goes to get checked out, and the doctor tells him it's throat cancer. And this is Friday morning when he learns this. And he is a priority at the hospital. And they say, come back on Monday, we're going to start your chemotherapy and your radiotherapy. So he has just the weekend to get his, you know, to put his affairs in order. It's his birthday that weekend. It hardly helps that, you know, he left the house that morning without his keys. So now he's locked out. So what do you do basically after you've been, you know, delivered this devastating medical diagnosis? You keep moving. You walk around the city. So he checks in on his friends. He goes to stay at his mom's for the night. He visits, he accidentally bumps into an old childhood friend. And there's another problem too, in that the doctor said to him, once you begin your treatment, Nino, this will likely affect your ability to father children in the future. So she gives him his cup and says, you know, you need to fill this up and you need to hand this into a fertility clinic, and this will ensure you'll have a family in the future. But his mind is just, he can't think straight. He starts kind of contemplating his mortality, the fact that his dad died young, the fact that, you know, his mom is at this point in her life now where she, you know, exciting things are happening for her, so he doesn't want to break that. So he keeps all of this to himself and just tries to have...
So he meets all these people, but
doesn't tell them
what's going on.
Doesn't tell them what's going on. Doesn't tell his best friend who's organised a surprise birthday party for him. He lies to his childhood friend by saying, you know, I've actually, you know, got a family on the way. His head is just all over the place. This is a first-time feature from this filmmaker. I've never come across this actor, Theodore Pellerin, before, but I love this. I think Pellerin is one to watch. He's in every shot. Like, this film just follows him all around the city of Paris and into little corners and cracks of Paris as well that you might have never seen before, at least on film.
Is it subtitled?
It is subtitled, yeah. But it's a beautiful piece of work. Surprisingly funny, very charming given the subject matter. You know, you will have a good time with it. Like, he is good company. I think his eyes are the best special effect in cinemas this weekend. Like, those eyes, like, Google this guy if you've never seen him before. Those eyes could tell an entire story.
Dee, you're going back to the 1980s.
Yes.
The film I actually saw quite recently.
Well, do you know what?
It was on late at night at BBC or something.
Yeah,
so
it's now available to stream in Ireland, which it hasn't been for, I don't think it's been available to stream ever in Ireland, but you can watch it now as of last Sunday.
We're talking about...
The Big Chill.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You can't
really important.
Always get what you want.
Exactly. Actually, another stacked cast from that era.
Ah,
you've got Kevin Kline, Glenn Close, Jeff Goldblum.
Kevin Kline's character is quite creepy in it.
Yeah, but
I hadn't realised.
It's not aged. The character hasn't aged well. No. The movie has aged fantastically, yeah. I think.
Kevin Costner, of course, very, very briefly.
Very, very briefly.
Not at all. They cut out. He was in the coffin, but they cut that scene out. He's not in it at all.
I don't
all.
Think we can have spoilers on the bit. Well, no. Maybe for people.
It's 43 years old. So I think we're probably
and you know
okay.
at the start what it's about. Like,
yeah, because there's a funeral.
There has to be
a statues
with limitations.
I haven't seen it since college. I remember we all watched it as a you know, a thing in college, and we were all like kind of blown away at the time in the 90s.
It's one of my wife's favourite films.
Another great one along the same lines, which I've checked you can get on Apple TV, is Peter's Friends, which
I saw it at the time when it came out. Yeah. It's the English version of it.
A lot of people actually thought it was a straight remake of it. It's not, but that has like Stephen Fry and Emma Thompson and Richard Branagh.
It's a bit more... It's a bit Lovey-esque.
Lovey-esque. I mean, in that
they
one,
lean into it too.
I think they're meant to have been a theatre troupe from Cambridge or something.
And they
like
were
that.
A theatre group
well, indeed,
from Cambridge.
I mean, write what you know, you know?
Fair enough.
But yeah, so...
Great soundtrack as well, we should
say. Really good soundtrack. Really good. But yeah, so The Big Chill, super...
Soundtrack
film.
Was so good, they released two... they released a second one, more songs from The Big Chill.
Oh, wow, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
I remember at the time watching it, it must have been in my either late teens or early 20s or whenever it was. Like, I can't put my finger on exactly the year, but young. And that you can't always get what you want being played at the funeral. We just all thought that was phenomenal.
Hilarious.
We just thought that was brilliant. Yeah. I think it was a great idea. Go back and watch it. And Chris, from you lastly?
Sugar. On Apple TV Plus, this is the other Colin Farrell streaming hit because we had The Penguin, and this is not The Penguin. So in The Penguin, you had Colin Farrell going large, going big, winning awards for it, deservedly so. But this one, there's no prosthetics, there's no, you know, grandstanding. It's Colin Farrell digging an awful lot deeper as this very thoughtful, charming, kind-hearted private eye working in Los Angeles. He's a bit of a mystery, although if you've seen season one, not so much, because there's a massive twist.
Massive
twist.
I mean, probably the biggest.
Yeah, I'm not going to give anything away.
I'm not going to give anything away. But I mean, I'm going to say it's probably the biggest twist you could ever imagine.
Yeah, I think it was episode 6 of season 1 where if you were starting to doze off on the couch or if you were, you know, on your phone, you would have gone, what the hell just happened there?
All right, don't tell me because I think I might watch this.
But to start off with, in season 1, we meet him as this private eye who loves his movies. And as a result, the show around him, it's a very stylish show which owes an awful lot to, you know, the classic detective
Philip Marlowe kind of
exactly
Dick
Tracy. He's a modern day Philip Marlowe. He's a man with expensive taste in, you know, whiskey and suits, but movies are his thing. You know, he watches at least one film a day. He subscribes to these cinematography magazines,
drives a very cool car,
gorgeous blue Corvette. Like everything about this character, you love watching him. But in season 1 he landed this case which is sort of close to his heart because he had to work with a film producer that he admires. He had to try and find the missing daughter of this film producer played by James Cromwell. And in the background then, his own sister is missing, so he's trying to find her. I won't mention all of the weird stuff that happens in season 1 that completely turns the story on its head, but in season 2, he's kind of alone. He's no longer got his team around him. He's no longer got his helper with him anymore. And he's looking for someone else's sibling this time. He's trying to find the brother of an up-and-coming boxer in LA, and juggling that case with his sisters as well. Very hard to talk about given what, you know, happened the last time around. It is. It sometimes opts for style over substance, but stick with it because I think Colin Farrell is very good at playing this, you know, as I say, kind-hearted private eye who can talk his way into and out of anything. You'd watch him all day. I love the look of it as well. It does this thing where it splices old
films.
Is it
current? It's not like a Madman.
Oh, it's current, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like Madman-esque or anything.
No. Okay, we're just out of time, but Dee, very quickly, you wanted to mention one last one.
Yeah, I mean, I can't recommend this enough. It aired on RT on Monday. It's now available on RT Player. It's called Bad, the Song That Saved Me. It is about a childhood friend of Bono's who inspired some of the lyrics of his early songs. But it's an incredible story. It covers everything from the 1974 Dublin Monaghan bombings to...
Which he witnessed.
To the Dublin heroin crisis in the early 80s.
I saw a little bit of this and it's very interesting.
And it captures the vibrancy of the music scene of that era. So you start to understand where U2 came out of. And it's also fascinating to hear Bono talk about the inspiration behind behind these lyrics.
And I didn't even know what Bad was about until I actually saw it in this TV show.
It's so beautifully made that despite the fact it's covering all these big topics and topics of redemption and all of these things, none of it feels rushed. It's a superbly made documentary. I cannot recommend it enough.
Is it long?
It is about an hour and 16 minutes, I think. So it's feature length doc, but well worth a watch. I think I'll watch it again.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Dee Reddy and Chris Wasser, thank you both for joining us. That's our lot for today, Ciara.
That is our lot for this evening. Do stay tuned for Off the Ball. They are up next. But myself and Shane will be back on the airways tomorrow at 4 p.m.
Tuara agus tógadh bogae.
Have a great evening.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With Kia.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.